one of the Democratic incumbents for Congress, Julian Schreiben. We're lucky for him to join us today. Hello, Julian.
Hi, good afternoon. It's great to be here.
Great to hear your lovely voice.
Can you hear us out there, Julian?
I can hear you guys fine. I hope you can hear me well, too.
Yep, we got you tuned in. And just remember, everybody, you listen to WGXC 90.7.
So what's the frequency, Kenneth? All right. So can we ask you a few questions?
I would love that.
All right. So why did you originally join the race? So like besides your exploratory committee telling you it was okay, why did you join the race?
I would say it's never about exploratory committees. I certainly didn't have one. For me, it was about being a kid that grew up in this community that had opportunities. I was the first in my family to go to college. My dad had, left high school in ninth grade and soon after that joined the Army. And my mom's an immigrant who has a small business that supported my family. I got to be the first in my family to go to college. Had wonderful opportunities thanks to a lot of help, thanks to mentors and teachers who wanted me to succeed, thanks to Pell Grants and scholarships and loans. I got to live the American dream. But increasingly, I feel that that dream is less and less available to more and more kids from rural communities like ours. And so when Congressman Hinchey, who's been a champion of working people for many years, decided not to seek re-election, I felt very strongly that I should step forward as a voice for the communities that I came from and folks who have a background like mine.
I see, and go to college you did. I heard you graduated from Yale Law School, is that correct?
I was blessed to have the opportunity to go to Yale, yes.
I see. So besides your working class background, were there any specific issues like the economic degree and environmentalism?
Absolutely, Jack. The issues to me, the core of this campaign is about fundamental fairness, about having people be able to have economic opportunity, about seeing a system in Washington where people who are in Congress, who've gone to Congress, are answering to the well-connected, the privileged, the lobbyists, the big corporations, and giving them what they want, and the voice of regular folks, of small business owners and of farmers, are being drowned out. So to me, it was critically important to be a part of reversing that trend, be a part of giving folks a voice so that we have economic fairness, so that we have policies that benefit everyone and not just the privileged few.
I see.
Similarly, you also... Yeah, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Well, you said the environment, and of course, as a kid who grew up here in the country, I absolutely love this region. I love what makes it beautiful. I'm looking forward to helping be a part of enabling us to thrive and have a strong economy while preserving all the things that make it a wonderful place to live.
I see. So how would you do that? Go on.
Sure. For example, a couple of examples where I believe the incumbent, the congressman who's in office now, has not followed a path of supporting our local communities that I would. So farming, for example, is a critically important industry in this region. We need to provide better support for our farmers, assistance to agriculture. We need to help young people who want to go into farming, and there are many, get better access to land and get access to startup capital, as well as support our farmers getting their products to market, whether that's in New York City or whether it's value-added products like Greek yogurt that is a big pack part of upstate New York now as well. We also need to invest in real rural broadband so that our businesses can be, our small businesses can be successful in the 21st century, And again, the sitting congressman voted to cut aid to rural broadband, just as he voted to cut aid for farmers and cut small business loans. So those are concrete things that we can do to improve the economic foundations of our region and build on the strengths that we have here.
So by farming, do you support the farm bill, the current farm bill?
Well, the current farm bill remains, I think, under significant negotiation, and there are a lot of changes going on. I know one area where, for example, our Senator Gillibrand has been very active is to reform how milk prices are set. So we're going to take a very close look at how that farm bill comes out and see if it's something that is a benefit to our local farmers or not. What I can tell you, my concern of going to Washington and speaking up for our family farmers is to make sure that what comes out of Washington isn't responsive only to the big agricultural businesses, the giant farms in Idaho or Nebraska, rather than the family farms that we have here in upstate New York.
Julian, you touched upon farming and agriculture, but another part of the economy up here upstate's economy is really driven by tourism. How do you see yourself encouraging growth and stabilization in that particular sector of the economy?
You're absolutely right that is a very important part. Tourism generally, but in particular, we have heritage tourism because of the tremendous history and cultural background of the Hudson Valley and the Catskills, as well as ecotourism and as well as agritourism. People want to come and enjoy the wonderful things that are going on here. And so that's part of why preserving the wonderful aspects of these communities is so important, and then promoting them, being an ambassador for upstate New York. And upstate New York was once a tremendous draw and an engine for much of New York State. So it's important as the role of the congressman to be a loud spokesperson and to make sure that we have an infrastructure that is supportive of tourists, especially those coming from the immediate metropolitan areas.
And this isn't about tourism, but speaking of the economy, hydrofracking promises billions and billions of dollars to the New York economy, but could harm our water supply. Andrew Cuomo has allowed limited up to 50 wells hydrofracking in 5 counties, not in Columbia, but like low in the south of New York. So what's your stance on that?
Sure. I'll pick up on the word that you use for promise. Promises, unfortunately, often don't come true. And that's my worry about the so-called promises of hydrofracking. At the same time, the evidence that we've seen shows very real threats to not only the environment, but the economy. So I can tell you that I am extremely skeptical of hydrofracking as any kind of solution to economic woes. I stand with Congressman Maurice Hinchey on his views of fracking, and I don't support the plan that was recently floated in the New York Times that would open up a portion of New York to this risky form of gas drilling. There's been no public health study conducted despite calls from hundreds of medical professionals across the state. The EPA study on fracking water that Congressman Hinchey initiated is still ongoing. And until that's done, I really think it's too risky to endanger our environment. So the proposed plan really concerns me.
And also about the industry of jails, the prison industry. What's your take on that?
Sure. I'll tell you that I spent most of my career as a prosecutor. So issues of public safety and law enforcement are both very important to me, and they're an area that I've spent a lot of time looking at and working on. The fact is that, I know one area where the governor has focused in on is finding better efficiencies in our state prison system. We're making a lot of positive steps in terms of figuring out what the best model is of addressing crime, addressing folks who repeat their crimes, and also figuring out ways to better protect society without necessarily the tremendously high cost of long-term incarceration. So in terms of hopefully consolidating and looking at more creative solutions, I think is important. And at the same time, in a time when unemployment is high, the last thing we would want, and certainly it's not something on the table, is suddenly having a lot of folks who have been building careers in that sector out of work. There's no expectation of that, and it's certainly something I would be concerned about if there were any suggestion of that.
Now, you talked earlier about farming, and specifically Kirsten Gillibrand's proposal to help increase dairy prices. Now, you say this, but you also support the jail system, which could, if going unchecked, they could buy out the land of poor farmers and create jails, therefore affecting the dairy economy. So what do you think about this?
Sure. I don't think there's currently any move to expand our jail or prison system. There are counties in the process of rebuilding their local county jails, which is a cyclical thing that happens from time to time. But we're not in the middle of a prison building boom by any means. So I don't see any immediate conflict between our existing penal system and helping our dairy farmers thrive. The key thing is to ensure that those dairy farmers have the support they need, which is reforming the price structure, helping those who want to go into value-added products like cheese production are able to do that, and ensure that those who are buying their product are paying a fair price. I don't foresee a conflict between those two areas of our economy.
Speaking upon the business of jail and prison, there's been a recent push to ease the war on drugs. Are you open to revisiting particular aspect of the war on drugs, which many independent observers believe to be a failure, and more specifically, the topic of marijuana decriminalization and or respecting the state-approved medical marijuana?
Mm-hmm. One of my things that I spent a lot of time on in my career is dismantling significant international narcotics trafficking rings. Taking down folks who were bringing in massive quantities of cocaine and heroin, distributing crystal meth to people who were addicted and destroyed their lives. So we should not downplay ever the dramatically powerful impact that drug addiction has on people's lives and the danger of drug addiction to the health and safety of our communities. I think that the reforms of the Rockefeller drug laws that have gone through in the last couple of years were positive steps to increasingly, number one, draw a distinction between violent and nonviolent criminals, and also draw the important distinction between people who have fallen into drug abuse and who need help conquering that drug abuse, who are not at their heart criminals, and for whom drug treatment can be a very important step. So it's something that I'm glad to see a discussion about, a healthy discussion about. It's an area that, again, our governor has taken a lead on, and that I think is a good thing to be discussing. At the same time, I have seen close up how horribly destructive drugs can be to the lives of people who get caught up in addiction, and how destructive it can be to the lives of their families and the people around them. So I would not be rushing into any quick decision about any kind of change in terms of our efforts to keep those drugs, keep people away from becoming addicts to those dangerous drugs.
Speaking of you breaking up the drug trafficking this cycle. I've heard that you've once worked for the CIA, which, according to a letter to the editor, he has worked for the CIA, the very same organization that has set up domestic spying operations, end quote. So do you feel that your career with the CIA might set back some voters?
I don't think so at all. I think that, first of all, I'm very proud of my public service career, helping to protect this nation and helping to ensure that that particular agency of our government was operating according to law, which was the mission of the General Counsel's office at the CIA, ensure that the agency complied with the United States law. And in particular, I'm proud that I had the opportunity to work with the Department of Justice and to help bring Al-Qaeda members and other terrorists to justice through our civilian courts, prosecuted in our criminal justice system, and deal with the real threat of national security in that fashion. I was very pleased to be able to work on a case called United States versus Osama bin Laden, which was the prosecution of four Al-Qaeda members for bombing our embassies in Kenya and Tanzania, killing hundreds of innocent people. And so those members who had participated in the planning and conduct of that heinous attack were arrested, brought to justice, tried in open court with a jury, convicted, and are now serving life sentences. And I'm very proud to have had a role in helping that be accomplished by helping our intelligence community support the Department of Justice's efforts. You know, that's what good public service is about. There are a lot of great people working in public service, in our national security, in our defense, and in law enforcement.
You touched earlier upon improving infrastructure. And I think in today's day and age, one of the most important pieces of infrastructure to get a business or economy or just an area going is really a high-speed internet. Would you continue or improve upon Representative Gibson's rural broadband initiative?
Well, you know, this is an area, frankly, where the congressman is playing a bit of a shell game. You know, he voted to slash more than $20 million of funding for rural broadband, and then managed to crow about and try and take credit for putting just a few million dollars back. So it's an easy subject for politicians to talk about and grandstand on, but it requires rolling up your sleeves and getting to work. So rather than say that I'd continue his efforts, I would say I'd initiate real efforts to roll out rural broadband in this region. It's going to require public-private partnerships, really getting to know the issue and ensuring that we can find a way to get everyone to benefit, because it's a win-win situation for support to the consumers, support to the businesses, and ultimately beneficial to the providers. But getting it off the ground and making the investment necessary to roll it out to rural areas requires some real cooperation and coordination, and I really want to be a part of that and work very hard for it.
So you were saying about Congressman Chris Gibson, the current incumbent. He was planning to slash broadband, and you're saying you didn't like that. So, what other things would you slash to balance our budget?
Well, first of all, the language of slashing, I think, may not be the right framework.
Well, cutting.
What we need to think about is right now, our most important crisis is a jobs crisis, and the most important focus we all have to have is building the economy and bringing jobs to this region. And when you grow the economy, that is one of the most important steps to reducing our debt and our deficit. We also need, as I spoke about near the outset, reform of our tax code so that millionaires and billionaires pay their fair share, and that companies that are seeing record profits pay income tax rather than getting tax credits, and companies that offshore jobs are not rewarded. We do need to look carefully at spending and find wasteful spending at every opportunity. As a prosecutor, I take very seriously the idea of looking at the evidence and making sure that we are not wasting a dollar of the taxpayers' money. But first and foremost, we need to make the investments necessary to have a strong, growing economy, have a fair tax system, and cut the wasteful spending that we can find.
And you were saying about punishing those who offshore jobs. What about the repatriation tax? Would you abolish it?
And let me forgive the fighting with the words, but I'm not about punishing anyone. But what I don't want to do is reward people who are taking jobs away from this country and then expecting support from our government, not to mention our consumers. In terms of repatriation, it is repatriation holidays, unfortunately, tend to create a cycle of the same problem. So we need to address the underlying issue of how to deal with taxation of these monies. But otherwise, if there's a holiday every couple of years, you just get the same problem every couple of years because people expect the federal government to have a holiday for repatriation.
And what about the military budget? Would you cut that, despite your background in military?
One of the most important things we could do in terms of our budget difficulties is to end our Afghanistan activities as quickly as we safely and orderly can. The fact is some of the biggest contributors to our national deficit, because let's remember, as of 2000, we had a record surplus in our budget. And we've gone from that record surplus to extraordinary deficits because of two wars that were not paid for, one of which is continuing to go on and which can be brought to an orderly conclusion, I believe, in a speedy fashion, which will have a significant impact on our defense expenditures.
You're currently running against Joel Tinner for the congressional seat. Would you pledge your support to Joel if he should receive the nomination? And do you think he would do the same for you if you were to receive the nomination for the election on the 26th?
Well, I'll let him speak for himself. What I'll say on my behalf is that I have a very strong track record for many years of working for and supporting strong Democratic candidates, and I have no plans of changing that.
By working for, what do you mean?
I mean advocating for them, contributing to them, telling folks that they should vote for them, putting out a yard sign. Every way that people participate in the process, I participate actively and eagerly because I believe it's very important to support candidates we believe in and support the issues we believe in.
And on a lighter note, Julian, you said just as a side note for the viewers and listeners out there, you said you were your mother, I believe, is actually an immigrant to our area. Where does she actually originate from?
My mom is from England. She came here in the late 1960s, like many immigrants do, to start a new life and live the American dream. And shortly after I was born, my mom and dad moved up to the Kingston area, which is where they raised me. My mom's a dance teacher. She has a ballet school in Kingston, the Anne Hebbard School of Ballet. If any of your listeners see the Nutcracker in December in Kingston at UPAC, that's her company's production. So she's had a wonderful impact on many, many young people's lives over the past 40 years of teaching children to dance and seeing some of her students become professional dancers.
Being that your mother is actually an immigrant to this country, and I don't want to take that into account for your stance, but I wanted to ask you, with recently the Obama administration has been taking strong actions to reform the immigration system. They say it's broken. Do you agree with the strong actions that have currently been taken to try to reform the immigration system of the United States?
I support the DREAM Act. I believe that we do need to address immigration from a comprehensive reform standpoint. I hear that when traveling around this district. It's an issue that's important to folks and requires the kind of initiative the president is taking to take a leadership position on this.
And on a different note, what would you do to help the gridlock that's currently happening in Washington?
I think, number one, you have to go to Washington with an attitude of service to the communities that you're representing. No one is sending us to Washington to fight with each other. We have folks that are struggling here. We have an economy that's moving in fits and starts, and we have enduring unemployment. And the first and foremost thing I would bring is an attitude of service to these communities. And I think if everyone brought an attitude of service to their communities, we would recognize that gridlock isn't helpful to anybody. That progress with respect to our efforts for our communities is what's needed, not everyone gumming up the works with their agendas.
And on that note, would you say you're more moderate or more further left?
I think that in this day and age, folks are getting tired of labels, especially on politicians. So I like to say that I'm not a hyphenated Democrat. I'm a Democrat. I'm proud of the ideals and the philosophy of my party. I speak on my website of the principles going back to Harry Truman and before of standing up for fairness for all people, standing up for inclusion for all people. I think you've heard in our interview, I've talked in fairly good detail about what my principles are and what my values are, and that Washington isn't working for folks who grew up in economically challenging circumstances as I did, isn't working for folks from working class and middle class backgrounds anymore. So those are the values I have. People can put whatever label they may want on it, but I think we who seek public service should stop throwing labels on ourselves.
And besides your economic policy, what would you say would be your foreign policy, like in terms of like relations with foreign countries?
Well, naturally, you know, the executive branch takes the lead on foreign policy, and one of the things that we have seen change in the last few years that disappoints me is we used to say that politics stops at the water's edge and allow the United States to speak with one voice internationally. Unfortunately, some of the leadership in the other political party have felt the need to I think, really undermine the president's voice on these issues. So it's an area that I bring a strong background of, having been in the national security world, and having seen foreign policy a little more closely than many folks who come into a race like this. At the same time, it's also an area where we need to be good listeners and thinkers before speaking too quickly. You know, there are a lot of significant international issues going on right now. I'm certainly watching very closely the European debt crisis and, you know, watching to see what potential ripple effects that could have here. So these are issues that are very important to me, and again, I think that it goes back to your question about gridlock and partisanship. This is an area where really we should be able to come together in Washington.
Well, I don't think that politics should stop at the water's edge. What about our relations with Canada and Mexico?
very fair point, and obviously those are critical relationships for the United States that I know this administration has invested a good deal of effort in and will continue to. You know, you mentioned Canada, and I'll turn back to a subject we discussed recently. Canada has been, in many places, pioneering the way in showing how to roll out rural broadband in rural areas. So that's a lesson, for example, I would want to learn from.
And besides your view on hydrofracking, what else would you do to protect the environment?
Well, I think, first of all, we need to protect the institutions we have in place, the Environmental Protection Agency, the Clean Air and Clean Water Act, as well as ensure that in any of our trade agreements, for example, we have environmental protections, because what happens on one side of the world, frankly, can have an impact over here. So anywhere that we look at having an impact, we need to understand what that impact is. And then here again locally, it's about promoting what is wonderful about this area so that we're able to thrive and protect it at the same time.
Do you support NAFTA?
I think that the evidence as to NAFTA has not been particularly positive for American jobs. You know, one of the things that is concerns me about our trade agreements at times over the past number of years has been focusing more on what will work for the big corporations who get the benefits I've talked about, as opposed to American workers. So we need to ensure that we have fair trade, not just free trade.
Do you have anything else to say?
Just that it's a pleasure to be here, and that as a kid who grew up in this community, and again, who's a graduate of Kingston High School, who got to have opportunities that many kids no longer get to have, I fear, I am just absolutely thrilled to potentially have a chance to represent this area, and I hope that your listeners will agree, will be excited to have me as the representative, and will come out and vote for me in the Democratic primary on June 26th.
It was actually a pleasure to have you on the show today, Julian. I want to give you the opportunity to let the listeners know where they could find out more information about your campaign and your stance, if you have a website or Twitter, anything, social news feed that could let the listeners in a little bit more about yourself.
Absolutely. So listeners can visit me at julianfornewyork.com. That's JULIANFORNY. Read a little bit more about my background and my position on issues. They can also like me on Facebook. It's facebook.com/JulianForNewYork, or search for Julian Schreibman for Congress on Facebook. We have a lot of ways to get involved. We have lots of opportunities for people to volunteer with the campaign, to participate in our phone banking, to help get the word out and help spread the message. So thank you for that opportunity. And again, it was a really great chance for me to have this conversation with both of you.
And thank you for having us.
And thanks a lot,
Julian. My pleasure. I hope we get to do it again before too long.
The pleasure is all ours. Definitely.
Best of luck on the 26th, Julian, and enjoy the rest of your day.